What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Point Game, presented by DraftKings. Don't forget, DraftKings is your home for all the action across the NBA and gets you closer to the game we all love. The crown is yours. I'm your host, CJ Toledano. You may know me from House of Highlights, Follow Through. But I'm joined here by the one and only, my co-host, John Wall. John, how you feeling, man?
What's good, man? I'm super excited, man. Just happy to be back for another episode. Sit back, chilling, relaxing. See, I got that UK gear on, so you know what's going on today.
It's a very special episode. I mean, I don't think it was our intention to be like a Kentucky pod, but like your history with the school is so rich, and you know, Boogie was on last week, and I wanna tease our guest coming up in the show, our third episode, but we already got Basketball Hall of Famer, the legend himself, Kentucky head coach John Calipari joining us. How excited are you to talk to John today?
Oh, super excited, man. You know, he's a coach I played for, somebody that I enjoyed playing for, enjoyed my time in Kentucky. I always had a great relationship with him, talking to him throughout the years of him coaching. And like I said, you see me at a lot of games this year just trying to cheer on the guys and be there to support him. And I know how much it means to him to be able to have a relationship with all his old guys that used to play for him. And we have that kind of connection where we lie familiar, you know what I mean? We stick together. We're a brotherhood. And we all try to support each other throughout the NBA, college, overseas, wherever we at.
Yeah, he's got already so many alumni in the league. So I know we got March Madness coming up, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But, like, it's crazy his influence on some of the biggest players in the league right now. So I'm really excited about that interview. But I wanted to talk about this past week in the NBA. You said, I just want to remind people, how much are you watching the NBA? What's your setup like at the crib right now?
I got this big TV in my man cave, and I split the screen into four. So I'm watching four games at a time. It kind of prepares me for midnight, March Madness, you know what I mean? March Madness coming out, I'm able to see all the games that when they have multiple games going on, or especially like football Sunday, I get to watch all the games. So, you know, the NBA is different. I mean, they don't really have too many games at the same time throughout the playoffs, but I'm able to have this set up ready. And last night I was locked in watching games and stuff like that. So it's super exciting to me, and I just love watching the games. All my friends are like, bro, how are you watching four games at one time? How are you paying attention? But that's all I care about, man. I just love watching the game of basketball.
Yeah, this past week was crazy. It was a big LeBron week, and I know you have some stories with LeBron, but you played at his camp, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, but you played at his camp. But this past week, it was like the dude is like 39, right? And he had that comeback against the Clippers. He just got the scoring record, 40,000 points. So I know everyone always talks about this, but I would love your opinion on it. Do you think LeBron is the GOAT?
To each his own, you know what I mean? Like, to whatever era, if you watch basketball or seen, like, you know what I mean? It's who you are. Like, you know what I mean? A lot of people that played against Jordan called Jordan a GOAT. You know what I mean? People that played against Kobe and seen, like, how dominant and special Kobe was, they called Kobe the GOAT. And then some people put Kobe in a place where he's not even in the top five. I don't understand that, because if that's the closest thing you've seen to Jordan, he has to be right there. And then LeBron, you know what I mean? He came in as a kid that I think he had to live up to the most hype ever. I mean, coming in as projected to be this at 18 years old and to withstand and got to the point, it's been special, you know what I mean? And being able to see it, it's like, it don't make no sense. You know what I mean, to still be playing at this high level at this age. I think the most somebody averaged at 21 was probably like 4 points or 5 points, if I'm not mistaken. Right. He's damn near still averaging 28 to 30 points. And it just shows how much of he take care of himself, put the work in, and better himself. But some people you see young guys this day call Paul George their GOAT. You know what I mean? So I think it's all about the era you watched and who you watched and grew up playing. But the historic records he's breaking and the pedestal he's been on and the bar he set so hard for a lot of people have been special. You know, you can't do nothing but appreciate his greatness while he's here.
Yeah, I think your first year, you came in right when it was his first year in Miami.
Yeah.
And so did you have any like specific stories of some of those battles or playing against the dude you had watched on TV in your first year? He was Miami Bron.
I think it was like the first year was kind of difficult or kind of different because they were still trying to figure out like, is D-Wade still the alpha dog or is Bron taking over the alpha dog? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And D-Wade had already won one in 06 and then they add Chris Bosh to their team. So I think they were trying to figure all that out, but they still was a great team. And highlight waiting to happen every time they got the ball, got on the fast break. Yeah. For me, I just wanted to play well because I knew playing them, everybody was going to be at the building. Everybody was going to come watch and see. I remember coming to Miami. They had some fire food. I mean, before the game, they had some fire food. I don't know. I think when LeBron left, the food menu changed because I went back one year. It was like, man, I want this order right here. They're like, man, hey, LeBron gone. This ain't the same order no more. I'm like, sheesh. But it was definitely some great battles, and they was a special team, man. It was definitely a special team. You know, shit, they went to four straight finals, so that lets you know how special they was and got him going to eight straight finals. So you know how good they right. was and how special they was. And I think the first year they lost to the Mavs in the finals, if I'm not mistaken. And then the next year they came back. There was a lockout year. They played 66 games. I think that's when it was like, all right, we're giving Bron a torch. Bron is a franchise guy now. D-Wade took a backseat. And you see, the rest was history from there.
Dope. All right. Well, let's move on. Another big story that happened this past week, Caitlin Clark. And I would love, you know, your thoughts. One, we're going to see her. She just declared for the WNBA draft. So I'd love to hear if you have any advice for the future number one pick. We all know she's going one. But what was your reaction when, you know, when you watch her overall, and then if you watched her, you know, get the scoring record on Sunday, what are your thoughts on Caitlin Clark?
Special. I think she's special, man. One of a kind for sure. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen so many people come in and be so special in this sport of basketball, women or men. I love the recognition these women basketball players are getting. From last year when I started watching Caitlin Clark, you know who she really was, and the battle between Angel Reese and LSU and all these. It's great that they're getting that type of exposure. I think they needed it. They deserve it. I mean, they just as talented as us. They just do it more fundamental. They're not really dunking as much and things like that, but they bring excitement to the game. And that's what I was saying on Sunday. I had four screen split. One of those screens was Caitlin Clark. She broke it from the free throw line. So I kind of talked to her a little bit through Instagram last year, and we exchanged numbers and try to get opportunity to try to go to a game and support. You know what I mean? But she's definitely a talented bro. Like, she has everybody locked in. She broke a record that nobody thought would be broken. It's crazy because Pistol Pete broke it without shooting threes, but that's just the era he was in. Right. To average 40 is crazy in 3 years. But for her to come and do it, like, not only break the women's record, but come and break the men record that we didn't think was going to be broken. That just lets you know how special people are, how advanced and changing the game is evolving. You know what I mean? Like, she has killer step back going left. But it ain't just a scoring for me. Like, she's helping her team win. She's getting triple doubles. She's getting 8 or 9 assists a night. So she's just not only looking to score for herself, she's trying to make her team better. And look at a small town like a small state like Iowa, and then look at the school. Like, nobody expecting to have a player like that or be on a mark like that. So just to see how amazing the fan base been throughout their tournament run last year and what they're doing this year, it's very special, and it's a sight to see.
John, can you speak on just like what she might be going through or what you went through from, you know, being that top dog in college and then coming to the pro game? Like, were there some things that you had to change up, or were there some surprises that you had making that transition from being, you know, a college star and then, you know, eventually becoming an NBA star?
One thing, I think she has more media spotlight. You know what I mean? Like, I had a little bit, but social media was not at the place it is now. You know what I mean? Like, you always, like, I always tell somebody, it's a gift and a curse to be who you are when you're on that spotlight and pedestal, because there's always a camera, somebody watching you 24/7. And that's something we have to get adjusted to and learn from. But I think for her, she did 4 years of college, so she's very, very experienced. You know what I mean? It's a difference for me where I did 1 year. I had to get adjusted to the speed of the game, the physicality of the game, just understanding, like, what the NBA was all about. You know what I mean? You get a lot of free time to yourself that you probably don't get in college. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what do I do with this free time? And so I think she's like developing to a grown woman already. So she knows how to handle herself and stuff like that. I came in at 18, turning 19, basically. So I'm trying to figure everything out, make sure I have a good team around me and all those type of things. So I think she's been in a good headspace, and I think she'll do fine. It was a little bit of more adjustment for me.
Yeah, I'm excited to see her in the tournament coming up. But
I can't wait to see the tournament.
And so let's talk about that, because I feel like in the last few years, the women's tournament has gotten a little bit, you know, way more attention, but than the men's. But definitely people are really tuning in. I think there were some TV ratings that got broke. So what is that? Like, the women's game is just super exciting right now, but the tournament itself is garnering a lot of attention. What has changed? Is it, you know, we're knowing about some of the players more specifically? What do you think is leading to the success of the women's college tournament growing?
Oh, I think I hit it on the nose earlier. Just social media. I mean, social media, everybody has a spotlight on you. You know what I mean? If it's a big highlight, it's going up on the internet. People are able to watch and see. And I think last year when Angel Reese and them made that run, and Caitlin Clark made the run she made. And, you know, doing this right here, I think that simulated a lot of controversy between both sides. And it was like, it wasn't a problem when Caitlin Clark did it, but then when Angel Reese did it in the championship game, it's a problem. Like, she's showboating. But for both of them to say, it's nothing but competitiveness. You know what I mean? Like, it's nothing against each other. And I think that's what you built up. You know what I mean? Just having two great stars compete at a high level and not judging them by what color they are. You know what I mean? Like, they both are talented. They both are great at what they are. And to put that on the pedestal, I think that helped them get to a level they didn't think they was going to get to. And I think they had, like, the biggest rated of all time, I think, in NCAA history. If I'm not mistaken, I don't want to pronounce wrong, but I think, like, it was the most watched game ever, like, for a championship game. And you wouldn't expect that from a women's game. You expect it from a men's game. And that just lets you know how much our game is evolving for the women. And I love every bit of it because I think they deserve that attention. They deserve that spotlight because there have been so many greats before them. And those greats paved the way for them. And now the younger generation is being able to put it on the pedestal on the platform.
We're going to take a break here on Point Game. When we come back, we're going to get John's former coach, basketball legend, Kentucky head coach John Calipari joining us here on Point Game. We'll be right back. We are back on Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano, presented by DraftKings. We are so excited right now. We're joined by legendary Kentucky head coach, basketball Hall of Famer, one of the most influential coaches in the game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari. John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I get to speak with John Wall. Jay Wall, yay.
I'm so excited because we had Boogie on last week, and it was different. I see Boogie on podcasts, and he comes on here with John, and he's a different guy. He's his real self. So I'm excited to see you, Coach, and your interactions here with your former player, John Wall. So I guess I wanted to start things off by saying, what was your reaction when you first saw John play? Was that through video? Was it in person? What was your reaction when you met John?
Well, the first thing was, oh, my gosh, is he fast. And you also looked at him. He had a toughness to him. He had a chip on his shoulder. I didn't know why, but you could tell he had a chip on his shoulder. But the best moment was when I met his mom. That was the best moment. Because when she and I got together, there was no chance he was going anywhere else. Just a good lady, that really smart. I asked John when he came with me, I said, you don't leave here by yourself. You leave here, you take people with you. I was basically saying, be a great teammate. He took five, him and four others. My whole team he took. I didn't want him to take my team, but that's never happened in the history of the NBA, five first-round draft picks. And he led. He came to my office one time. Coach, we got to have Eric. He remembers. He laughs. And I go, why we have to? He doesn't think he's a first-round draft pick. I go, what? Well, then we got to convince him. And by the end of the year, he had, what, a 17-year NBA career?
Yeah, he had a run.
And the greatest kid. So I'm giving you another story. So I said to Eric Bledsoe, how fast is John Wall? He said, oh, my gosh. And I said, he's faster than you? Oh, no, he's not faster than me, but he's fast.
Hey, Coach, Boog and I chopped it up last week. We had so many memories. Honestly, we want to thank you for those. You brought us together. None of this would have happened to realize how much we needed each other. I just want to know, like, when you're recruiting a player, like, what are y'all looking for, you and your staff? Like, what you looking for when you're recruiting a player? Like, look at a guy like Boogie Flynn, y'all just recruited and signed.
First of all, I got to make sure they can be great teammates. Because you know what we're doing here, John. It wasn't just you. Mm-hmm. I was trying to coach everybody and give everybody a chance to go do stuff. Now, the better players, they're still going to be the better players. They're going to be the number one pick, the number two, the number six. That's how it is. But you got to be a great teammate. Really, you got to be a five-star player who has some stuff with you. Let me explain why. When you're a three-star player, no disrespect, I think it's great when those kids bust through, but they're used to chasing. They're three-star. They're trying to chase the fives. The minute you step on this campus, John Wall, you're being chased, would you say?
And everybody's Super Bowl.
Being chased, am I right, John?
We everybody's Super Bowl. You told us that when we stepped on campus, it's like your radar's on your back. Like, don't care if you're a number one player, number two player. If you're a five-star, like, we're the team that everybody want to beat. So we go play somebody, they making every shot, like bank shots, hook shots. I'm like, bro, why are they not missing against us?
Hey, how about this, though, John? Every player tried to make their name at your expense. And if you haven't been that guy your whole life, it's hard to be that guy. Mm-hmm. Been a three-star, maybe a four-star. And all of a sudden, the roles flip. And that's why I say, yeah, we got to get talented guys. But the everything we're trying to do, the process, means really good players come together, learn to be great teammates, and then challenge each other, and they grow. And then every game you play is a war. You figure out who can play in wars and who can't.
But, Coach, that it's insane that you hit on one of the most historic, like, players in Kentucky history, your first year. And I had heard some stories doing my research that, you know, John was interested in playing with you when you were at Memphis because he was watching D. Rose. So, and then you went to Kentucky and you had to make that call. Like, I've heard the general story, but I would love to hear the specifics. Like, you decide you're going to Kentucky and you're like, man, I had my guy commit to Memphis. So did you call John? Like, how did that go down?
You know, I don't remember, but John will tell you, he was never promised starting minute shots that I'm going to be here for you and I'm going to challenge you. I've got you back, but you're going to have to earn everything. And you know, it was different. And then the Eric Bledsoe, it's a great story. I go down to recruit Eric, and now John had committed already. And his high school coach says, well, John Wall and Eric, why would you recruit Eric if you have John Wall? And how would you deal with this? And I go, Coach, if your best two players are the same position, what would you do? He said, I'd play them both. I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play them both. And Eric whispered in my ear as I walked out of the school and said, Coach, I want to play for you. And the two players that were like that were John Wall and Eric Bledsoe, and they basically were the same scoring point guards. And they got along and they covered for each other. I got a team this year that's really similar in that they celebrate each other. And we all, look, DeMarcus, you know I love DeMarcus, but he was a handful. He was a handful. And you know, his mother moved here back when the families weren't moving to the schools. She was a nurse. She brought grandma, his two siblings, about a month here. She pulls up the van and I'm, where are you going, Miss Cuss? I'm going back to Alabama. And I go, why? Because my son trusts you and you're not afraid of him. And he's going to be fine. And she left, and he was fine. Now, he wanted to shoot every ball, and everything. I should have had everything and all this. But at the end of the day, I loved him then, and I love him now. I still think he has some time left in his body. John, how great was he here?
He was special. He was my roommate, so, you know, I knew him. I knew him very well. We had a funny story. He said, stop telling the story when his feet caught on fire when he was running suicides that day. But it was great, man. Like I said, like, the whole time there was just so special. Like, you made it easy for everybody because, like I said, we all was five stars. We could have went to any school and just tried to be the man by ourselves. But for you to be able to get five stars, returning player in Patrick Patterson and come there and all come to be like La Familia and learn how to play with each other. It was special. So my question I want to ask you was, what makes Big Blue Nation so special to you?
Well, it's a blessing and it's also a curse, because the blessing is our fans are engaged. They support. But if you struggle, they're still engaged. So you lose a couple, they're still engaged. You didn't live through social media like these guys have to live through. Can you imagine what they did when John was here? The game ended. We had to have police horses beside the lodge so that they could go in without getting accosted. Now it's more social media driven and all that kind of stuff. You got media trying to get clicks, so they'll say anything, even not true. He's not coming back. He's not here. It would have been crazy with you. You know what else would have been crazy? NIL. Oh, NIL would have made it crazy.
Coach, but do you think you would have had these guys longer if you had NIL back then?
I would have told John Wall, you're nuts. You're the number one pick. You go. You're not coming back. I would have tore up his scholarship. But there were other guys that I would have said, you're making a lot of money near what you're going to stay. But if they chose to lose, John will tell you, I would have helped them and done whatever. But, you know, back then, yeah, let me say the greatest thing in all this. Every one of these kids, the first thing they did is they took care of their mom. Every one of them took care of their mom. That's the first thing they did. So, you know, it would have been different. They would have all, how about this, John? None of you had a car. None of you had a car.
We was walking.
Walk-ons got caught. They got a parking lot of cars. Are you kidding me?
They lit, man. They lit now. That's one question I wanted to ask you, though, Coach. I was going to ask you, has there ever been a player that you wanted to stay one more year that you possibly would have won a championship with, but you let him go? And at the same time, have you ever had a player that wanted to take the next step, but you knew it was probably better for him to come back for another year, but you let him make his own choice?
Well, I tell you one guy that I think would have changed a team. One guy that wanted to go and I wasn't sure. Yeah, Daniel needed to stay. And I think if he stayed, it would have helped him in his career and it would have helped our team. You know, I've had other guys that I talked to parents, and I don't want to mention names, but I talked to parents and I said, are you sure? And the thing came back with, well, they're all leaving and he feels he has to. Now, that young man didn't have the career that you guys had. Like, he needed another year. I got a couple guys on this year's team that probably could use another year, but you know I'm going to support whatever their decision is. But I'll tell them, are you sure? Because there's two things you have to be. NBA, no boys allowed. NBA, no boys allowed. Are you mentally ready and are you physically ready? You think of all you guys, Jay Wong, you were all physically and mentally ready to go. That's why you all did well. Mm-hmm. But if you're not mentally ready, what will happen in that league if you're not physically ready?
Yeah, it's like a bully taking something from you in high school. It's over with. Like,
and then what would the other coach do? You're out there physically, you can't handle it.
Attacking you every time. Attacking you.
Not, are you saying every time or every other time?
Man, every play.
Every play. They'll put you in a switch. They'll screen. They'll do something to where you're the guy. So if you're not mentally or physically ready, you shouldn't leave. And now with NIL, it's all ego. Sometimes it'll be family ego. I'm mad because he played more. He should have played more. He was better than your son. But your son is fine. He maybe take a little more time. And so that's the thing I worry about, that some kids may leave when now There's no reason to. No reason to. If you want to stay and you need to stay, look, Willie Cauley-Stein came to me, kind of like Patrick did, and said, I want to stay another year. And you know me, I'm like, why would you want to stay another year? And Willie Cauley said, I'm not mentally ready to do this yet. And the second thing, I couldn't believe he said it, and I think he might have been lying, but he said, and I'm enjoying school right now. And coach, you know I need more. So I said, okay. Patrick's thing was, I haven't shot a three-point shot. I've not played in an NCAA tournament game, and I'm going to graduate in 3 years. All right, well, those are all
I'm glad you let him come back. We needed him. That was perfect for us.
I know.
I wish Jody would have came back too, though. That would have been special if Jody would have stayed.
We wouldn't have lost that game where we went 1-for-22 because I didn't let him shoot it stepping over half court.
Coach, you, I mean, the numbers don't lie. With this last All-Star game, I think the number is you coached 30% of them. And then we also had De'Aaron Fox snubbed. We had Jamal Murray snubbed. Tyler Hero. So what are you doing differently?
And you had John Wall. You had DeMarcus Cousins.
Right. But you like know, this year's All-Star.
Other guys that were in that game.
What are you, so what are you doing differently that leads, as a college head coach, that leads to the success of these NBA players?
I would hope they would say their first year in the NBA was with us, with the terminology, how they're trained. And I bet you John Wall didn't get coached one more play the way I coached him. And I'm not saying I'm good. I'm saying I'm hard. They go to the NBA. It is an exchange. We're paying you to do this. If you don't do it, we'll go get somebody else. My thing was, no, I'm holding you to a high standard, John Wall. If you're my best player, I'm harder on you than everybody else. You want to tell them the story? You came in and told me you loved me in the locker room.
I was breaking it down to him. I told him, I said, I came to him. I was like, man, coach, I love you. He said, man, what happened? What's going on? I was like, man, I ain't having fun. And then you could tell. And then you could tell him the rest.
So he comes in. I'm sitting in after a game. He said, coach, you know I love you. What'd you do? What'd you say? He said, I said, I'm not having fun. You know why you're not having fun? Because they're guarding you under the basket and you're missing shots. That ain't fun.
Yeah.
So you got to get in. And then he makes his game winner against Miami. We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying, Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater. You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember, you said you never seen me do that. You see me do everything else. I haven't seen myself do that. I never had to be in that position. But that's what I was saying. Like, it's like, it's just different. Like, when you get there, it's like, I felt like I had to be a pro. You know what I mean? Like, high school, you work out, you do those type of things, but we held to a standard. I remember just in the summertime, we had to be on the line at 6 a.m. for 20 suicides in 20 minutes. Remember that? I told her, I went back to my dorm. I said, Ma, I think I picked the wrong school. I ain't never did no conditioning like this ever. But it prepared us to another level to make us feel like we wasn't college students. Like, we felt like we was pros. Like, we had to be pros every day. And that's why I feel like you have so many great guys that have La Familia, so many guys that's excelling so well in the league. My question I want to ask you is this, because I know everybody used to hate you about this. You started this one-and-done thing, and we talked about this before. Now everybody wants to do the one and done. Like, how do you keep your confidence so strong that you knew you was doing what's right for the kids and what's best for you? And now everybody want to follow your trend now.
Well, what I knew, let's start with DeJuan Wagner. I knew that the way I played him, he would be in the best draft position, and coming back would not help him. It would have helped me, but not him. And what we found out when we started doing it, Tyreek Evans came in. Should I go or stay? And I said to him what I said to DeMarcus. If you want to do what's right for me and my family, you should stay. If you want to do what's right for you and your family, you should leave. And it never hurt us. You guys all left. And we went to the Final Four. That group all left.
George.
And we went to the final, you know, we went to the national title. If one kid would have came back from that group, the national title, we'd have been a Sweet 16, Elite Eight. And then we won 38 straight before we lost. It never hurt us. As long as we were getting five-star players that understand you're going to be chased. You're not chasing anymore. You're going to be chased. And, you know, I just said, look, I'm doing it. I knew I took heat. I took heat here at Kentucky. We can't do it this way. This is, yeah. You care too much about the kids. And I get it. But after they saw it for 5 or 6 years, they're like, kind of exciting. And these kids are all doing well. I just didn't want to do anything at the expense of the kids. And I'm trying to do the same. You know, 1 year I had to play two groups. Did I want to do it? No. But that's the only way I could take care of 10 kids. That meant they were all really good. By the way, we have Alex Porthres got a Bell's palsy. So all the people listening, he's over in Europe. He's going to have to take some time, but pray for him if you get a chance.
Yeah, for sure that.
Coach, I don't want to relive bad memories here, but I wanted to ask you if you remember 2010, tournament time's coming up. So if you remember who you fell to, the specific player, I know we all know the team, but the specific player that you fell to in 2010, and how much that loss sort of bothers you still.
Well, first of all, I always knew we could dominate you physically, athletically, but we weren't an execution team. We just bowled you over and went. Matter of fact, I called Coach Wooden, and I said, have you watched us? He said, yeah, coach. And I said, we're not a great execution team. What do you think? You know what he told me, John? You play too many people. You have to play six guys and all that. Well, I couldn't do that with this team. And he also said, but I understand why you're doing it, because kids will transfer and all that. He said, when I was doing this, I played six or seven. Seventh man played a little bit. If you wanted to earn it, you earned it in practice. But that game, we played a really good team the game before and beat them really good. But we missed almost every three. And then we come in the next game. They go 1-3-1. And we're like 1-for-16. Well, you're going to lose on that. And it was the one Achilles heel we had. There were times in the season where Eric got in foul trouble. That killed us. Mm-hmm. So he was in foul trouble, which made the game close. And West Virginia played a heck of a game. Heck of a game. I think if we got by that one, John, it would have been kind of scary, because I think we would have, most teams wouldn't have tried to play a 1-3-1.
No, I think Coach Huggins did a great job with that one, because he started off in man, and probably like after the first 2-3 minutes, he said, I can't do this no more. And we just went like 0-for-20 to start off. Like, I watched the game the other day. We started off like 0-for-20. I'm like, this is some BS.
Like, and it was stunning that we missed that many. But you know what? If it were best of seven, what, John?
We would definitely win that series. And then you got to think, like,
it was one game.
Coach, do you remember the player whose idea was to play that 1-3-1?
Well, I wasn't in their huddle, so I don't know. It may have been the coach of the Celtics.
Yep.
That's what there I was looking go. For, it, Joe Mazzulla. So,
yeah, but let me say this.
Yeah.
Joe Mazzulla was shooting about 15% from the three.
Yeah.
And we were saying, let him go. We're going to help off him. What'd he do, John?
Man, he made like 4 or 5. Him and Devin Ebanks, they was like, the first half, they didn't make a 2-point basket.
I'm like, what in the world? These guys aren't supposed to make threes.
Yeah.
But you know, they were fired up to play us like everybody. Played them again, and Brandon Knight beat him pretty good. We played him again with that 38-0 team and beat him pretty good. But they beat us on that night.
Yep. They won the best night, because I remember the next year y'all beat him, and DeAndre Liggins was walking, shaking hands. He was like, do the John Wall dance now. Do the John Wall dance now. I remember that. But I'm glad they got some get back. But that still is like the game that haunts us, because we had a special team and we wanted to go. But like you said, in that tournament, it takes one game. It's just one game and it's over with.
Yes, and it's we were prepared for the game, but it's just something happens. Foul trouble, an injury, you hit a bad spell. which is what happens in that tournament at times. And like I said, my teams have done well. We've had one blip. But just about every coach that's coached in this, even they've had one or two blips. You have.
Hey, I got this last question for you, Coach. Your team has so many weapons this year, right? I know this the hardest part is, like, you say you got to go 10 deep. Like, how do you decide who to play and who to rotate at times? Because, you know, I'll be at the games I come and see, and I'll be like, well, I wonder what he's going to do here, because I wouldn't know what to do with the talent you have. I was telling CJ, I feel like this might be your deepest team with bigs that could all be versatile, a lot of guards, and I think it's probably your best shooting team, I think, with how y'all can shoot the ball at a high clip.
We are, but here's the difference. Every team we're playing, their average age is 23 or 24. Grad students, COVID years, and our average age is 19. So that's one thing. But you asked that question about how do you decide? First of all, because we have a bunch of guys, if someone has it going, you know what I do, John. I just leave them in.
Mm-hmm.
So last game, I subbed Antonio Reeves, our leading scorer, with 8 for 10 to go. And the reason I did it was because he hadn't had a break yet. And I wanted him to be able to finish the game. And then I put Justin at 4 and Big Z. And all of a sudden, that group of 5 played so well, I didn't sub. Just finished the game. There's no reason to sub. So that's about how we'll end up doing this. And I told everybody, John sits, he's about 5 rows from me in the North Carolina game. I mean, 5 seats from me, not 5 rows, 5 seats, right there. And he looks at me and he goes, calm down, you're fine. Let him go. Robert Dillingham, I'm kind of coaching him like I coach John, holding him to a really high standard. So he comes in and sees me and says, you coach me different. You're coaching me different. And I go, I am. All my former players, De'Aaron Fox, Jamal Murray, all of these guys, John Wall, call me and say, why didn't you let me play the way you're letting him play? Just shoot and play and go and make some mistakes and you leave him in. You think I'm coaching you different. Everybody else thinks I'm treating you different and letting you go. You got this butt backwards. So I am coaching some of the guys. I got to let Reed Shepard go on defense. He has some defensive breakdowns that I want to choke him, but he ends up with 5 steals because he's playing that way.
Yeah, 5 steals and 2 blocks.
I know. He could. Hey, let me just say this. You got to get the video of us at Indiana. They're going absolutely nuts. John does a crossover and dunks the ball left-handed over like 2 guys. And everybody in the building just sat down and said, what just happened? I can't believe they didn't do ESPYs then. That would have been an ESPY.
Yeah, I dunked on Jordan Halls. I remember Jordan Halls. He used to play for Indiana Elite. Daniel Oren outlet the ball to me.
I thought that's incredible advice that John had given you. You said the North Carolina game. So, and you guys are known as Guard University. And so I guess it's a question for both of y'all. Do you think John has a coaching future? Could he help your staff out? Or do you think he has a coaching future anywhere?
If that's what he chose to do, yeah. Because he has a wealth of knowledge and he's also gone through it. And I have Tyler Ulis right now. He's unbelievable. The players go to him, talk to me. Here's what I'm doing now, John, with this team. Amateur, pro. Amateur, professional. So when something happens, I'll say, that's what a pro does. And then the other one, not talking, not ready, that's an amateur. So don't think you're a professional. You're an amateur. Now, I'm on these guys for that. You have guys like Tyler who had to bust through and do their thing, and he's been great. If that's what John would choose to do, he'd be great at it. I would say get on an NBA staff because of NIL, the transfer portal. I'm not sure where this is all going, but you would be great around college kids because of the resource and all the things that you've had.
Yeah, I like what Tyler's doing. I talk to Tyler a lot. I love what he's doing because he's one of the best point guards to come out of Kentucky in the last years. And like you said, nobody expected him to do what he did at the level he did and the size he was and the way he played. And I know he's helping DJ out a lot. You know what I mean?
He is.
And that's
and,
dope.
And Reed and the other guys.
Yeah, because it's dope because I like for DJ, it's different because DJ's been in the role where he's always been a scorer his whole life. To now, he's learning how to be a point guard and how to run a team. And it's kind of been shaky for him and difficult for him at times. So, like, how you help him get over that hump?
I have him meet with Tyler and watch tape and talk. But the greatest thing about DJ Wagner, the most whatever I tell him, he does immediately. If I say, move the ball and cut hard, he moves the ball and cuts hard. If we talk to him about defense, what he's got to do, he does it that moment. Really intelligent, really smart, a quick twitch. But you're right. Some of his habits are, I'm just driving to score. Well, he's a 7'2" guy. You got to drive for another reason. Two, three moves when you don't need two, three moves. Just one move, go by the guy and score the ball or create a shot. I got to say this. We talked Tyler Ulis. When he and his family came in my office and we were recruiting him, and I knew that this he was good, but he was small. I had coaches say, Cal, you finally got a four-year point guard. And when he was in my office, I said to him, if you want to come here, don't be planning on staying 4 years. I don't know when you'll leave, but you ain't staying here 4 years. You do know that, right? He said, where do I sign? I just wanted someone to believe in me. I wanted someone to know I could do this.
I remember he came on his visit. It was him, D-Book, and Jahlil Okafor. We was playing pickup. And I had so much respect for him and D-Book because D-Book had got – they was getting into a bull. You know how they do on the battling, going back and forth, and they didn't back down. And I was like, you know what, I could tell this kid from Chicago. And then D-Book was not scared to guard me. And I was like, this kid got a chance to be special. So I knew from when you signed those guys, I knew there would be something good for those guys. So I'm glad that D-Book's at the level he's at, and I'm glad that Tyler got over the humps he's at, and he's able to be on a coaching staff and build his resume up.
And D-Book, the one thing I found out with guys like you, all-stars, I mean, you're the best in the world. Like, I'm not talking just good. You're the best in the world. You have to have an unbelievable, otherworldly self-confidence that won't get shaken. Now, it may get shaken, but you never let anybody know. Devin Booker believes there is no better player in the NBA than him. And you're not going to convince him. If he took a lie detector test, Jamal Murray, they took lie detector tests, and you said, are you the best player in the world? Yes. And the lie detector test would say he's telling the truth because he really believes it. And you've got, if you're going to be that guy, Tyrese Maxey, the guy he's busting through, you got to have otherworldly self-confidence. That's almost like you're running for president and no one can tell you you're not the best person in the universe. And so I've had those guys and they have to build it. I can't. And when I'm on them, it should never affect them. A guy that loves you and is going to try to help you and he gets on you and you break down, you don't have the self-confidence you need. You should look and say, dude's crazy. He's nuts. Are you hearing him? Saying shit to me. I'm his best player. I may be the best player to ever play for him. He's saying shit to me. He's crazy. That's that otherworldly self-confidence that you have to have. And Devin had it the minute he stepped on this campus. At 17, by the way, youngest player, he and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, to get drafted, 17-year-olds moving into the league.
Crazy. Baby. One last question, Coach. We appreciate your time. We'll let you go after this. Boogie was on last week. We had a clip kind of go viral because we were talking about Big Blue Madness and the cherry picking, all the players getting sort of introed. And he said that you had a conversation with them right before that. And I want to hear your side of the story. I won't even tell you what he said, but do you remember?
Well, you got to tell me what he said because that was 12, how many years ago? 10? That would've was 14
years ago.
I just remember this. Coming down. That I remember that.
He said you chewed him out, essentially. So I wanted to make sure he wasn't, you know, exaggerating that. But he went up there because he said you talked to him. He went up there and he was stone-faced, did nothing. So do you remember that interaction at all?
He probably was scared to death. But But I will say this, and I'll tell the story that he hates that I give. We were running those 2020s the first day. He stopped after six. He's supposed to run 20. And he sat down against the wall and said, "My feet are on fire. My feet are on fire. I can't do this." And I walked over very calmly. Didn't I, John? Very calmly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, "Your feet are on fire." Yeah. Wow. Okay. Now, I want you to know, if you can't complete these 20 for 20s, you will never start here. I'll play you, but you'll never start. Now, you play well, I'll play you 30 minutes. You don't, you'll play five. You will never start here unless you make these. Next day, what, John?
He was out there running.
And he
you should have seen it. He threw his shoes across the court. I mean, like, we like, what in the world? So Cal didn't finish the story. That day he didn't finish. He made him sit at half court and watch us run. So
So we,
like I was telling you, CJ, last time, we all mad, like, man, we want to fight him, but, like, we can't beat him up. Like, we got to jump him. Right. So, but the next day he came back and finished, but he thought about, he was like, "Man, I want to transfer, but, like, I don't think I'm ready for this." He like, "What you think?" I said, "I'm not leaving, but that's up to you if you want to leave, because we shared the dorm together." But it was fun, though.
You know, every player I've coached, the first term wants to leave. That's just, this is hard. I'm not trying to fake it. I'm not giving, I'm not promising. You got to take what you want. And a guy like John Wall, you don't leave here by yourself. You take people with you. You bring them together and say, "We're all leaving." And that's what he's done. And I've had other players do the same.
Coach, we appreciate your time. Good luck in the tournament.
Thanks, guys. Love you, John Wall. And I
thanks, Coach. Love you,
you
too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
Love it. You're a legend. Appreciate you, Coach.
Thanks.
All right, welcome back to Point Game. Time for our final segment, Bucket or Brick. Just a reminder, Bucket or Brick is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is your home for all things NBA action. From player props to same-game parlays, check out everything DraftKings Sportsbook has to offer to make your NBA experience even sweeter. The crown is yours. Okay, for anyone first time listening to Bucket or Brick, I'm going to say an NBA statement. And if you agree, or if John agrees, you're going to say Bucket. And if you don't agree or disagree, you're going to say brick and you're going to explain why. So, John, you ready?
Yeah, for sure that.
The Celtics beat the Warriors, just as a reminder, by 52 on Sunday. So they are favorites to win the title of the season with plus 230 odds, meaning if you bet 100, you're going to win $230. So, John, bucket or brick, the Celtics will win the NBA championship this season.
I say bucket. I think the moves they made this summer was perfect for their team. They did a couple trades during the deadline. And I think those guys just have experience from being in the finals before, like knowing what it really takes to win it now. Then I think adding a guy like Jrue Holiday, that's a great champion, going to help. He's been through there. He can keep them calm throughout the process. And then having a coach in Sam Cassell, you know what I mean, that's been there, won championships as a player and knows what it takes. I think they find a way to get over that hump.
Yeah, do you think Jrue is going to – like, who's going to be that difference maker outside of, you know, Tatum and Brown doing their thing?
I think you got two guys. Maybe you have Porzingis, that's definitely a difference maker, but I think also just Jrue Holiday. You know what I mean? His versatility, able to guard any position, kind of like a Marcus Smart was, but also just be able to knock down shots. He's probably taking the biggest sacrifice out of all those guys of not really caring about scoring but just doing a little thing to help them win, and I think that was a big piece that they wanted to get whenever he hit the buyout market.
Okay. All right, moving on. Second one, bucket or brick. Jordan Poole should be a starter. Bucket or brick?
That's a tricky question. I'll say
don't go 50-50 on me.
I think brick. I think he's a seller in the role that he's in, you know what I mean, where he's being a primary ball handler and he's able to just to be able to create for himself and be free. I think a little bit in the starting lineup, you know what I mean, Kuz was getting it going, Tyus Jones was a true point. They're trying to develop Danny Avia a lot. He's putting the ball in his hands a lot more. He's being able to create and show his versatility. So I think that's great for him. And it kind of took away from Jordan Poole just trying to be himself and be free.
Right.
So I think in that second unit, he's able, you've seen it, like, I think he's having like 20 some of his last four or five games. He's able to be more free, be out there, be the more primary ball handler as a backup point, kind of, and just be a great six-man role. That might be his best position for him, is being a great six-man role, kind of like a Jordan Clarkson type and those type of guys, or Norman Powell.
Okay. All right. So this is an interesting one. This isn't an NBA question. So bucket or brick, pickup basketball should be played to 13 by ones and twos. Bucket or brick?
Pickup?
Yeah. Like, what are you guys playing scoring to in pickup?
Bucket. I think bucket. That's kind of how we play, though. We play ones and twos. And I think sometimes we go to 11 or 12, something like that. Like, so, yeah, we kind of play like that. I think that'd be fun, ones and twos like that, because you get more games in. I mean, that's how we kind of play. We don't really play like a shot clock or a 5-minute game or 10-minute game. We kind of play like ones and twos going to like 11. I think we might go to 15.
Yeah.
For the first game. For the first game is 15. Then after that, it might be 13 or 11. So we cut it down after the first game, because you don't want the score to be too high. Yeah, ones and twos. I play ones and twos.
And win by two?
Nah, we play straight up.
Okay.
And we play straight up. Go get a bucket. Get a stop. You want to win, get a stop.
That's why, because
some people do play, you got to win by two. Some people do play. Like, so I guess wherever you at, whatever court you at, those are their house rules. It's kind of like playing spades.
I've gotten in real arguments. Have you ever gotten in like, you didn't play in like the 24-hour fitness the way, you know, some of these regular guys do, but like, you ever get in like an altercation on a pickup game?
For sure, all the time. I'm all the time in the pickup game. Yeah. And then some right here at Ronnie Taylor, we the ones runs. Oh, we get into a lot of altercations. Like, not no fighting or nothing, right, but like right. Competitive nature. And like, nah, we doing this or doing that.
Yeah.
And I think we play ones and twos out here for his. And sometimes you got to win by two. Sometimes you win by one straight up. But it'd be a lot of altercation back and forth.
Right.
I ain't getting off the court. I'm staying. You can't beat me. I'm beating you. So. It'd be fun. Pickups are fun, man. Very exciting just to get out there and hoop.
Dope. All right. Well, that's been episode 3 of Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John, you feeling good about this?
Yeah, I feel great, man. I think we had some great stories with Kyle, and then we hit some great questions. I was just asking him, trying to figure out different things about, like you said, like the NIL, how you do all those type of things, social media world, just talking about stories that we've been through and went through. And I think it was dope.
Dope. Well, I appreciate everyone listening, watching this. Guys, this has been Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And we'll say this. Like, we want to start taking some audience or some fan questions. So if you can, go to wherever you listen to these podcasts, Apple Podcasts, leave a review, subscribe. But in that review, ask a question. I'm going to start asking John some of the fan questions, and we'll start giving answers that, you know, the people are going to want to hear. So this has been Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. We appreciate you guys. Peace.
I think I ran like a 4.443 when I was in high school. I was fast. Like, people don't know, in my high school, I won the long jump state championship, the 4x1 and the 4x2 and the 200. Yeah, I was fast as shit. I'm gonna tell you a funny story. Yeah, I was a wide receiver in the free safety. I was nice. It was nice. I wanted to keep playing, but my high school I went to at the time, Garner High School, Garner Trojans. Our high school, JV team are like varsity, and our varsity looked like a college team. So our basketball coach and football coach, you couldn't miss summer workouts. And I was playing AAU, so I was like, man, which one I'm going to choose? I'm going to choose AAU because I get to travel. I ain't about to be out on a hot-ass field. Yeah, so that's when I stopped playing. But when I did the long jump, I didn't know the technique to do all this. So I used to just jump and hold my knees like a cannonball. And then I used to just fall forward. You know, like, if you fall backwards, wherever your hand land, that's where they, like, mark your spot at. So I used to just cannonball, hold on as long as I can, and then just fall forward. Yeah, because I was a freak athlete. Off one foot, I had stupid bounds. But I didn't have, like, I didn't go to, we didn't really have no, I didn't go to the high school where you really had a real coach teaching you every day, like, how to, I'm just naturally gifted. Like, God bless me, and I used to. No, that's one. Then the other one is, so look, I had to do hurdles one day, right? Never did hurdles a day in my life. The person that do hurdles couldn't do it. I'm jumping and landing on 2 feet. And in the midst of the hurdle spaces, I'm running as fast as I can to catch up. I was like, man, I'm never doing hurdles again. This is embarrassing. But we didn't have nobody to teach us. Like, I'm just like, this is like, you know what I mean? All natural. Like, and it was like Just imagine, this was not me supposed to do it that day. The person we had pulled a hamstring, like, bro, we need somebody for the vent. And they looked at me, I'm like, hell no, eh?
You trip over that first one, it's over.
That's why I jumped off 2 feet, because I jumped off 1 foot to land on two. I'm like, I'd rather just jump and land than embarrass myself out here.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. See dkng.com/promos for eligibility and responsible gaming resources. Odds and lines subject to change.